Welcome to the closing daf in Perek Kira, the third Perek. And we're up to today from Yerushalayim Ir HaKodesh to daf Mem Zion. Let us once again position ourselves back into the sugya, this wonderful sugya of Mukta, which led us into understanding differences in terms of the psak between Mukta Machmas Mius, which we don't hold of, and which Rabbi Yochanan said, even I who pass like Rabbi Yehuda, definitely Paschal like Rabbi Shimon when it comes to Mukta Machmas Mius. But, strangely, we had this whole new idea because we tried to figure out why Rabasi was not willing to pick up the menorah that had fallen on his robe so that he would be able to easily get moving again. So we started, and remember this all was because we were trying to understand how far is Rabbi Shimon willing to go with the idea of something that you're mekatzeya mida'atcha. He certainly wasn't willing to say that just because you made a decision that you're going to use something, that was kitzua, because nobody could say that since the Mishnah, obviously only asked being metaltal in ner yashan. If it was a ner chadash, there was no yisr in tiltal. And there, it's manufactured for the purpose of usage, which certainly should be as bad as your determination to use it for muksa, like a bed for putting a rebbe on, for putting money on, or something like that. So then that would become we decided that that isn't really the meaning of the sugya over there. We thought that it was. It must be because you make up your mind not to move it from its place. So it's a thing that an adam is kaveil amakom. Nope. And we didn't go for that either, because we showed that a kila shel chatanim is not considered to be muktzah. So we came up with a brand new idea, which on the surface was entering into something that had nothing to do with the dinim of Mukta. So what we decided was that we've got a different problem over here, and that menorah was a menorah shel prakim, and a menorah that was chulios. It's made out of these separate pieces. And because of that, we have a gezerah that we're afraid you're going to put it together, which means that even Alibi Rabbi Shimon, because of that gezerah, already you're involved now with Isser, and therefore even though you're of Rabbi Shimon, you wouldn't be able to move it. And that, the last thing that brought us to was the question yesterday of the difference between things that are considered to have a Torah's Kli and things that nonetheless we take away the Torah's Kli because we're worried about the possibility that you're going to come Lidei Isur. That was the last thing that we had gotten. I think that was the last thing, wasn't it? Let's see.
We started buses with the
Liberation. Yeah. Sorry. Now that led us into the issue of where it would be that something could become a mekutze midato because it happens to be there. So we had this machlokas about how to define a basis ledavar asur, and the difference between Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Yehuda in our favorite case of the suitcase, and what would be the din of something that was left by accident or something that was put there on purpose. And what we came out was that the real reason, we had to explain that according to Rabbi Shimon, the real reason that a ner that is lit is considered to be, while it's lit, is considered to be osur, is because the shalhevet is isur. There's no way for you to touch it and handle it. And because of that, the entire thing is a basis of davar ha'asur, which Rabbi Shimon is willing to go for, but is not willing to go for an isur that you may end up blowing out the candle by moving it, because it would be a davar she'eno mitkaveh. So it turns out that according to Rabbi Shimon, there's also a basis of davar ha'asur, which opens up the new issue of how far do we go on that basis of davar ha'asur, but we still haven't really finished discussing how far we're willing to go on things that you might end up putting together on Shabbos. So we're sort of hanging in the middle. This closing daf is going to deal with those two issues, the approach to a basis of davar ha'asur, when, and the approach to when we're going to be makbid on various types of beds, maybe a folding bed, a cot, that way we would be on a menorah that has chuliot. So we got up to the second line. We report here that Rabbi Ruminus claimed that Rebbe was allowed him to move the incense holder, I think it's called the censer, I think, yeah, that had burnt out incense on it. So in other words, you had all of the leftover ashes in it. And if we're assuming, which we are right now, we're going to change our mind, but which we are right now, that those ashes are useless. So it was rather surprising. Why was Rabbi Matirim to move it? And this is Rabbi Yochanan, who is reporting this. Says Rabbi Zeira to Rabbi Asi, how could that be? Rabbi Yochanan couldn't possibly have said that, because the Mishnah says later on, in this exact case, it seems to me, that suppose you have a baby who is carrying a stone. You're allowed to pick up the baby. But that's because the baby needs to be picked up. How about if you have a stone inside of a basket? Can you pick up the basket if there's a stone in the basket? Well, that's the same thing. Baby holding stone or basket holding stone. But the basket isn't asking to be picked up. So over there, you're allowed to pick up the basket. However, Rabbi Yochanan, and that's our problem, is Rabbi Yochanan himself said there's one fundamental condition of being able to pick up that basket with a stone. And that is that there are also apples in the basket. So we're talking about a kalkala mele apirot taskinan. And it's only because of that, that we view the basket as being a basis ledavar ha'asur ve'hamutar. So what we have over here is a stone, but also peirot. In this case, let's assume that the peirot are going to certainly be more choshev than the stone. And because of that, we are allowed to move it. And by the way, even we're allowed to move it, it's not stomp to move around the stone. It's to move it, to put it on its side so the stone can roll out. Meanwhile, you can use the basket, unless you specifically have to move it in a way that carries the peirot. And so on. But anyway, you see the time of the ait by peri. Rabbi Yochanan was only willing to be matur with peirot. So how could Rabbi Yochanan have reported the story of Rav Ruminus, according to which Rebbe allowed him to move this leftover ashes and there was nothing else inside of the censer? Where is the equivalent of the davar ha'asur ve'amutar if this is only a basis of davar ha'asur? Rav Asi heard that question, oh my God, he was like totally shocked. This, of course, is the pasuk in Daniel, Ishtomam kisha'achada. He was so shocked that he couldn't move for a minute. He's like, whoa, you know what? It's got to be talking about that there must have been some leftover kratin from the incense that was in there. So those leftover little bits are more choshev than the ashes. And it's the same thing as having fruit in the basket with the stone in it. Omer Abaye, what do you mean? The story was that Rebbe allowed Rebbe Ruminus. Rebbe is fabulously rich. And therefore, to say that in Rebbe's house, the fact that there were a couple of little leftover grains of Livona in it is ridiculous. What do you think Rebbe was going to do with this thing if it hadn't been Shabbos? They would have picked out those little pieces and thrown out the ashes. They would have dumped the whole thing in the garbage, obviously. So how can you, please mute yourself. So how could you possibly say that this is considered to be a Dover Choshev in Rebbe's house? Now, I know what you're going to tell me. You're going to tell me it doesn't have to do with Rebbe. Baruch Avram, mute yourself. It doesn't have to do with Rebbe's personal house. It has to do with, in general, is something Choshev or not? But that would be wrong. Why? Because v'chite mechozulanim, it would be good for poor people, even if it's not good for Rebbe. The halacha is, and here we are, back to the dinim of kelim once again. What is considered to be a shear of a kli that is mekabel tuma when it comes to beged? It depends. Sholosh al sholosh or shlosh al shlosha, remember? So if someone is an ashir, sholosh al sholosh is not choshev. But if he's an ani, shalosh shalosh is chashev. And it says beferish in the Braita that if a ani has a small piece of beged or has a horrible regular beged that no person who's an usher would wear, it's been out of very poor material. So big day aniim are considered to be bekabel tuma only when they're in the rishus of the aniim. And big day ashirim are the only things that will be metame for an usher. But a beged of an ani is not considered to be a beged for an usher, which means that you do look at the particular local circumstances. And in this case, Rebbe is the usher. And that means that the chashivut, which of course is the basis of the shiur of Kabbalah Stumah, is the chashivut of a couple of grains of frankincense inside of a container in Rebbe's house is laughable. It would not be any more chashiv than the ashes would be. It would all go into the garbage. So now, what is the reason that it's not a contradiction for Rabbi Yochanan to go around saying that Rebbe actually was matir ruminus to move these ashes because it's a basis l'davar ha'asur and there is nothing mutter in it, and yet in the case of the stone in the basket, it needed to be a basis l'davar ha'asur ve'amutar, according to Rabbi Yochanan, in order to be able to move it. So obviously, we've got to give a different explanation. Therefore, says Abaya, the explanation is not because of the concept of basis davar ha'asur v'amutar. It's because, and this is a new idea that we haven't had before, so please put it down because it's a very useful and practical halacha. And that is called garaf shel rei, which is basically a chamber pot. And it's filled with excrement. And normally you would say there might be problems of usability of such a thing on Shabbos. You wouldn't be able to move it out of your house. And that would be pretty disgusting to have to leave chamber pots full in your home. And therefore, the Rabbanan were never oser a garaf that is used for filth. And this is the reason you're allowed to take out your garbage on Shabbos and so on. Anything which would be mukta but is disgusting to have around, they were not Geyser, the din of Mukta on. We have found this to be a general klal, that anything that has to do with Kovet HaBriyos, that we'd found that you never find Isurim on it. So whether it's Avanim Mekur Zalot for Beit HaKise, or whether it's the Geref Shorei, or the certain dinim that we were making Lagabe Yemeit, to be Matir Tiltu, Menatzad, and so on and so forth, this is a general klal. But this is a particular halacha. Geref Shorei. Omar Rava, absolutely wrong. And I'll explain to you for two reasons why it's wrong. Number one, the meaning of a garaf shel rei is that it's disgusting. There is nothing disgusting about a burnt out incense holder. I'm sorry. Number two, garaf shel rei is megalia, v'amechasya. A chamber pot is open. You don't have a toilet seat cover on a chamber pot. But a censer is always covered because you never burn incense in an open container. You burn incense in a closed container that has little holes in it that allows a certain amount of the smoke to get out. And therefore, this has nothing in common with the graf shel rei, and that is can't be the reason. So now we've rejected the svara of basis l'davar ha'asur v'amut. We've rejected the svara of graf shel rei. So what, according to Rava, is the reason that Rabbi Yochanan isn't contradicting himself when he says that Rabbi Ruminus was allowed by Rebbe to move it? Says Rava, when we were in the Beis HaMedrash, we used to learn by Rabbi Nachman, he allowed us on Shabbos to move a kanuna agav kitman. And a kanuna, remember, when you didn't have heat in your home, it could get really chilly, and people would use these warmers, a little brazier, you would put next to you, or you would keep near your hands, keep your hands warm, put a little bit of flammable material in there, like a piece of wood, and it would burn for an hour or two. Nowadays, of course, you still have this, by the way, except nowadays they use these chemicals. When you break the container, the chemicals mix and generate heat for a couple of hours. So people are out in really cold weather. This is a very useful kind of thing. So this is called a kanuna. And he said that actually we could move the kanuna in order to use the ashes. And therefore, your entire idea was completely backwards. It wasn't that the ashes were muktza the way you were assuming. In fact, ashes are tremendously useful, and especially in those days, they're tremendously useful, because you could cover over dirt. A child may have done his thing on the floor or something. The floors were made out of just the afer. ofars, you could put afer over whatever's on the floor if somebody spilled something, and you could just cover it over with the leftovers. And because of that, on the contrary, the ashes were not muktzah. That's the point. And even though you'd think that the kanuna was muktzah because it is used for burning wood, that wasn't a problem for us because I needed to move it in order to use it as a container for the ashes, which were mutter. That's probably what happened over here. Rebbe told Rebbe Ruminus that there's very useful ashes in there. Move the whole thing. And the chiddush was that he allowed us to do this even though we had little pieces of wood that were useless that hadn't burned up completely and they were still in there. So the idea was, on the contrary, maybe the kanuna would have been a basis l'davar ha'osir because of the pieces of wood, but Reb Nachman said to us that it's dafka the ashes that are matir, the things that otherwise would be muktzah. So if anything, is the exact opposite. So Rebbe was saying, well, of course you could go ahead and move your censer, that even though there might be little bits of unburned stuff that would be muktzah and so on, but the ashes are so useful, you can move it because of the ashes. Exact inverse of what we originally thought, according to Rava. Asks the Gemara, how could you say that? Let's take a look at this braita. And here we're talking about this braita. We're in the middle of discussing the machlokas between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon about a ner that had burned on that Shabbos. And it says that even Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon both agree that even though Rabbi Shimon is normally matir, if there are pieces of the burnt wick and the wick actually broke, so now you have pieces of actual wick, that then it's not allowed to be moved on Shabbos, because even Aliba de Rabbi Shimon, despite the fact that the fire went out and there's no longer the problem of the Isser, that this became a muktzah for the Isser, it now became a muktzah for the Petila, which is considered to be completely and totally useless. It is the equivalent of this rock. And now that is Lechora talking about a kli that still has leftover oil in it. And I mean, obviously oil connected broken pieces of wick. I mean, the oil is certainly going to be the equivalent of the apples in the container with the stone. So why, according to Rabbi Yochanan, what would be the problem over here? There's nothing choshev that we should say this is a basis davar ha'asur. It should be a basis davar ha'asur v'hamutar. And to Zabaye, this was a special situation. Why? Because it was talking about the Galil. And in the Galil, now Rashi understands that in the Galil, because of the fact that they didn't have a linen to use for Petilot, the linen was imported from Mitzrayim, was basically in the southern part of Eretz Yisrael. So because of that, they viewed even little pieces of leftover wick as being very choshev, and of course, it was completely useless on Shabbos. So therefore, it was worth more than the oil, or at least worth the same as the oil. Mishnah Berurah says in all of these cases, halacha lemaisa, it doesn't have to be worth more. It's okay if it's worth the same amount to you. Tosfos understands exactly the opposite. Tosfos says, no, where does it ever say anything about there not being linen in the Galil? That's not the point. What we do know about the Galil is that they had tons of oil. So in the Galil, the oil wasn't choshev. That's the point. So even though you were looking at the oil as being the equivalent of the apples in the basket that Rabbi Yochanan was matir, in the Galil, the oil was basically looked at the way the kratin would be looked at in the house of Rebbe. Add a little bit of oil, another tablespoon or two of oil, and throw it out. They were so rich with oil. Tovo b'shemen raglo. Okay. All right. Anyway, this concludes the issues that we've been discussing about in terms of the concept of basis davar ha'asur, which is nogea in our parak because of the very din of bamei madlikin, which then leads directly into what do you do with the leftovers. And it turns out that the leftovers lead us into the question of what's the difference between while it's burning and after it's burning. And it all boils down to how we view a basis davar ha'asur between Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Yehuda. So the fact that something was asur ben hashmashot, according to Rabbi Shimon, doesn't have any meaning whatsoever because I was not mikatzea et midati, and that's because of the fact, as we put it, adam mitzapeh ematai chabeh haner. I know that it's going to go out. The only time that we would consider something to be mekutze midah tov, according to Rabbi Shimon, is where you did something specifically to be mekatzea it midatcha. So we had a number of cases like that, even on Libda Rabbi Shimon. You put something up onto the roof, but then it wouldn't be usable. Or you did something that would make it unusable because of an iser, because it was uksa l'mitzvasa, or because it was uksa at that point to some type of isura. Then and only then is kitsua midato considered to be sufficient. And the other alternative of something usur, according to Rabbi Shimon, is something which ipso facto is eno mina muchan, because it never was bidato. And that's talking about something like a rock. That would be considered to be absolutely eno mina muchan, which is the closest that Rabbi Shimon gets to the idea of what we call mukta. And the other concept of the idea that something could be usur because it is a basis of davar usur, according to Rabbi Shimon, is only while it is actively being used as the basis of davar usur. We also established in the process of doing this that simple provision of a specific place for a thing is not considered to be mikatzeya midato. Later on, we'll see that there are cases where it is, but that's because of the idea called mukta machmat chisaron kis, where over there, the reason you don't want it moved is because it's a safe, basically. You're keeping it safe from people who will use it and ruin it because it's easily ruined when it's moved. That brought us also to the other issue, which was the question of something that I cannot move because of a gzeira that maybe I will come to actually make a kli. And that opens up this sugya that is coming. At what point does something become a problem to put together? Because obviously, let's imagine you've got a folding bed, right? So you're going to make this folding bed. How do you make the folding bed? You just let it back down. You take the pieces on the side, you put them into their place, and then there's no screwing of anything. There's no need to push anything into anything else with a tremendous type of additional pressure that you don't need a peg to be able to make it work and so on and so forth. It's meant to simply come together by your putting it in a particular position. But how about where you've got to put it together? So this is the next case. Levi Bashmu, Ashkechina l'Rabbah v'l'Ravuna Barchia, d'Avakami apitcha d'vei Ravuna. So here, Levi Bashmu meets up with Ravuna Barchia and Rabbah. There they are, about to go into Ravuna's house. And he says to them, what would be the din about putting together a mitah shel tarsiim b'Shabbat? Now, there's three possibilities. Rashi sometimes says tarsiim is simply the name of a place, tarsiim. Other times, like here, Rashi gives us possibilities. A tarsi really means what we would call a gypsy. So because of that, when you're talking about a gypsy's bed, you really have in mind somebody that's going around from place to place to try to make money, and then he just sleeps outside. He's got this little cot that he goes to sleep on. What does he make money from? So usually he'll make money from doing small repairs. So that would mean he could either be a copper worker, which Rashi suggests over here. So he would go around fixing people's broken pots because he would solder them together or remelt them. Or it could mean that he was a weaver, because tarsiyim sometimes is a thing that people will do. They'll go from place to place. And this was very popular once upon a time. Invisible weaving. Everybody remembers the old invisible weaving craze, right? When you've got a hole in your pants, you bring it to the invisible weaver, and he manages to use the existing threads to fill up the place that was the hole in your pants. Anyway, so these are things that the gypsies would do. But the important thing is that a gypsy actually sleeps over wherever it is that he happens to be. So they would carry around these little cots with them that weighed nothing, basically a piece of cloth with a couple, with two poles on either side and two pieces of wood that would be the headboard and the footboard. And then the thing would fold open up, and it would be like this. And then you would sleep on the cloth between the two, the X that the legs formed. So would you allow to be putting that together or not? Rabbah and Ravuna told Levi that there's no problem. You can do that. So then Levi, later on, he comes to Rav Yehuda, and he tells him that Rabbah and Ravuna Barchia said it was okay. So Rav Yehuda was pretty shocked because he said, okay, My God, Rav and Shmuel both say that if you put together a mitzvah shel tarsim, you're actually chayav a chatas. Forget about the question whether it was osur min rabbana, because this is considered to be, and remember again, we have that famous machlokas. Are we talking about makah bepatish, or are we talking about binyan bekelim? Though this is the machlokas between Ramban and the Razel, between Rashi over here and Tosis and the Ramban. Okay, but whatever it is, this is the question, because even though the Gemara generally says that the halacha is that ain binyan bekelim, according to the Milchamais, the Ramban in the Milchamais, it is considered to be for Rav and Shmuel over here. Rav and Shmuel Dafka don't hold to that. And they say yesh binyan bekelim, because of that they hold that you're chayav achatas. But in any event, how in the world were they matir you to do something that could be mamish an iser diraisa? Whew. Says the Gemara, because let's take a look whether what the dinim are about this halacha in the Tanoim. You're asking me from Rav and Shmuel. Let's take a look at the Braita. First of all, the Braita definitely seems to be against Rabav and Rav Bachia, because it says over here, and this brings us right back to the opening sugya of this entire discussion, which was the menorah that fell on the lap of Rav Hasi. So here we finally get to a braita that discusses the question of the type of menorahs, the candelabras that you add pieces to. So you need, let's say you have four guests or whatever, four kids in the house. You add according to the amount of light that you need. You put an additional piece, you screw in the additional piece, and that is machzir kinei menorah b'shabbat. So now you put in a piece into your candelabra. It says here that the Tanna Kamma says you're chayav achatas for doing that. Again, because apparently it's either a makeh bepatish or it's binyan bekelim. But how about another case? How about if you are a painter? Now, a painter has got a roller, but that roller has got to be a different size depending on whether he's painting the lower part of the wall or he's painting the ceiling, obviously, right? So how does he make that roller work? He screws in an extension pole. So you screw in one pole when you're in the middle, you screw in two poles when you're up there, you screw in four poles when you have to get to a high ceiling, whatever. What would be the din of screwing additional poles, extension poles, into your roller if you're a painter? So that is called the kaneh of sayadim, a guy who does seed. That lechatchila is osur to put in on Shabbos. But if you did imirzir, you did something osur, but you're certainly potter midiraisa. It's not considered to be a makeh bepatish, because the way in which this pole works is that there is no makeh bepatish. What do you mean makeh bepatish? There's no pole that is defined as the correct pole. You're constantly putting in something or taking out something in order to be able to make it work for the place of the wall that you're working. So it's ipso facto, not shayach to anything that has to do with a gemar kli. So over there, you shouldn't do it, because it's similar to binyan bekelim, but nonetheless, there obviously wouldn't be an os. Is Rebbe Samoy Aymer? This is something that the Rebbe has to explain to us, that there are different types of musical horn instruments in those days. I'll get to our tokolosh in a moment here. And the question over here is, there were horns that were straight horns, and there were horns that were curved horns. And the type of horn that was a straight horn, where is Ari? I see his hand is raised, but I don't see him, for heaven's sakes. All I see is Calvin. Oh, my gosh. Okay. So the difference is that the way that they used the instruments in those days was that there would be two separate pieces. There would be the horn, the basis of the horn itself, and then they would screw into the horn different size holes that would make different tones when you move them or when you put your fingers on them. And on a straight horn, you would simply be able to insert them loosely. And in a French horn, you would have to screw them in tightly. That was the difference between them. So Rabbi Samoy says, if you put these pieces into your French horn, so then you would be chayav achatas, because it has to be put in by screwing it in. Whereas if it's a straight horn where they would just drop in pieces and then to change the octave that it's working on, they would put in another set of pieces, that would be similar to the idea of a roller for a painter. And there you would be putter. And now, Sir Ari, yes, your raised hand.
Ready? Sorry. What I was curious about, is it only because all of these items are not permissible to use on Shabbos?
No, that's irrelevant. That's irrelevant to us. We're talking about over here. We're not answering this as mukta. We're answering it in terms of the menorah that fell on Rabasi. Once it's osir as a kli, then you discuss the machlokas of Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Yehuda as to whether it would be a kli at all, or whether it's kli shemlach to liyitzer, and so on and so forth. But that doesn't bother us right now. So this is a made machlokas which we got into only because it actually entered our consciousness because of the similarity to not being willing to move a menorah that had gone out. But we didn't realize that involves other things. So these are the other things.
Both of the examples are items that can't be used on Shabbos. A bed, like a pool cue or something that would be a symbol.
Well, you could certainly use a bed on Shabbos. Most people do. Gosh, I use it all the time. Okay. All right, so what in the world then were Rav Huna Bar Chiya and Rav Abba thinking? I mean, this braita doesn't seem to have anybody. You could put down that hand. It doesn't have anybody that agrees with them. I mean, we get into real trouble over here. Answers the Gemara, you're right, but there's another braita, and they hold like that other braita. Inu domer ke'aitana. D'tanya, malbinot amita. And here we are back in our kalim issues once again. So you will remember that it happens to be exactly in the parak that we're currently learning, which is all about the legs, the feet that are attached to the legs of the mita. So you'll recall that we had these malbeinot. The malbeinot were a foot that was attached to the leg, and it was something that was basically used to protect the bottom of the mita. Remember, we compared it to the idea of the carpet protectors that you have nowadays, where you could put a foot of a couch into this wider thing that protects the carpet under it. So it has a Beit Kibul on the top. Those are the malbeinot. So if you're the malbeinot amita, were these big pieces of wood that they used for that, and that those would hold the kraot amita, and those were the legs that were actually attached to the bed. But they could be obviously detached. I mean, but they were part of the bed. And you also could have levachim shel skipas. So levachim shel skipas. Those are actually not referring to skiing in the Alps. They're referring to skiing in the safari. How do you ski? Well, what you do is you take a bow and arrow along and you do a hunt. Now, you may recall that on a crossbow, there is the little piece that you could take in and out on your fancy bow that holds the arrow in place. And those things are removable depending on what kind of arrow you're using. You slide one out, you put one in, you can actually buy these on Amazon. How do you like that? So this is up to date. They're called crossbow nuts in Amazon terminology. I'm assuming that's the official terminology. You should not put that back into your bow. But if you did, you would be potter. And it would be usher to do it because the reason that it's not considered to be a makah bepatish is exactly the same reason that we said it's not considered to be a problem to midiraisa to change the poles on your roller, your paint roller, because you're constantly moving them. So anything that you're constantly changing is not shayach to makah bepatish. But you can't screw them in. If it's a type that you have to screw in or nail in or press a peg in tightly, if you would do that, then you would be chayav achatas, because that already makes it permanent. Rav Shimon ben Gamliel omer, it depends, really. You're claiming that it's always osur, either midrabbanan or midiraisa. I do not agree with that. I say that if it's the type of thing that slides in easily, and it's rafui, then it's even mutter lechatchila, so that there's three madregas. If it's loose, it's mutter. If it's tight, it's usher, but still, it's only a drabana. And if it's permanently screwed in or nailed, then it's a diaraisa. So basically, Rav Abba and Rav Huna Bar Chiya, who said that we're talking about a heter to do a mito to tarsium, was referring to mito shel tarsium that are never going to be tight. So according to this, there would be no problem, even lechatchila. Now, Tosis doesn't like that pshat. This is Rashi's pshat. The reason Tosis doesn't like that pshat is that it just doesn't seem to make any sense that we would have a machlokas in such extremes. I mean, how would Rav and Shmuel would say that you're chayav achatas on something that Ravuna was saying that you're mutter to do lechatchila? I mean, how could that be? We never find machlokas that go to that extreme. If, in fact, we are talking about a mita shel tarsiyim that is loose, The Torah says, of course we're not. Rav and Shmuel were talking about a mita shel tarsi that was tight, for sure. And they said that if it's tight, that then you're going to be chayav like the Tana about the menorah. Fine. But the reason that we were asking on them against what it was that Ravuna had said, Ravuna Bar Chiya and Rav Abba had said, was because gufa this idea. Namely, well, if according to Shmuel it would be possible to be chayev in a tight bed, don't you think that it's inappropriate to be mater lechatchila on a loose bed? Bishlam, if it would only be drabonon on a tight bed. No, I can understand that they hold on a loose bed, it would be mutter, because it would be like a gzera legzera kind of thing. But if you're telling me you could be chayev midiraisa on a tight bed, I mean, can't people get mixed up between a tight bed and a loose bed? That's the way we understand it, according to Tosis. Not that it was a machlokas min ha-katzel ha-katzel, that Rav and Shmuel would hold your chayev midiraisa on the same mita shel tarsim that Ravuna was going to say you could do even lechatchila. Rabab and Ravuna would never have had that kind of broad machlokas with Rav and Shmuel. Anyway, there's another maisa like this, that Rav Chama used to use a mita gilal nita. So a mita gilal nita is the same type of thing. You put it together when guests come, and he would have one of that. If he had a lot of kids coming over for Yontev, he would put it together. So one of the Talmidim says to Rava, now the girsa Rava doesn't make much sense over here, so the girsa probably should be Rav Chama. I mean, why would you go to Rava to ask him what was going on, Rav Chama? So it probably says, Rav Chama, why are you doing this? My daitcha, why would you do such a thing? It's because I'm assuming you hold, and remember the concept, min hatzad. Min hatzad we had before, tilto min hatzad. Here we would have binyan min hatzad. The idea of min hatzad is shalo kedarko. So I'm assuming that you hold that this is not a normal way of building a kli. Normally you screw something together and so on. But over here, since it's made like this, it's not similar to binyan. But the problem is, I mean, even if that's true, it may not be usher midiraita, but I mean, at least it should be an issur d'rabbanan, don't you think? And he said, no, I don't think. Why? Because that's exactly what Reb Shimon ben Gamliel said. Reb Shimon ben Gamliel said, if you've got a loose bed that fits together easily, then ima yarafui, it would be mutar. And therefore I do it even lechatchila. And we're ready for our favorite kapitan. Go for it, Richie. Thank you. Notnim kli tachat aner lekabel nitzotzot, velo liten letocho mayim mipneshu mechabet. Now it's going to turn out that this Mishnah is talking about whether you're dealing with Shabbat or whether you're dealing before Shabbat, and therefore it's pretty strange on the surface. We talked about the issue of why you would be allowed to put a kli to catch sparks in order to prevent a fire, right? And we said the reason is because that is not similar to the case we had where you put a kli to catch dripping oil. The reason that it's not similar is because nitzotzot ein behem mamash. So we already discussed that before. But the new thing that we're talking about over here, which is the question of can you put something that's got water in it to catch a flame, why in the world wouldn't you be allowed to do that on Erev Shabbos? That's weird. So that's what we got to explain over here. So, asks the Gemara, first of all, the kasha that we had earlier, I thought it should be the same as the problem with the oil, and that problem, if you hold that the oil asers it, remember, is the question of being mevatel kli mehechano. First, we thought it had to do with being metaltel, a something for something that is not metutal, like Rabbi Yitzchak claimed was the halacha. We end up asking a lot like that, and the real reason is because, remember the Machlokas Rashi and Tosfos, Mevato Kli Meichano, it's actually Rashi contradicts himself, sometimes he says like Tosfos, putting a Kli into a position where it cannot be moved is considered to be cementing it in place, in which case it's similar to Binyan, or making the Kli unusable is similar to Stira, which is the more reasonable Tosfos explanation, which Rashi sometimes says. So isn't not that you're being mevata kli meichano? Om Rav Huna b'Rabbi Rav Yeshua, like we said earlier, nitzotzot ein behem mamish. Once something falls, it's like a wisp of material that is not really considered to be there in terms of the chashivas of the kli being mevutal because of it. But what about this thing? Lo yitel tocho mayim mipeshu mechaber? Why would that be? I mean, maybe this is a Stam Mishnah that's going according to Rabbi Yossi, because Rabbi Yossi does say later on, towards the end of our Masechet, that if somebody has got a fire on Shabbos, then if he wants to make a firewall, how would he make a firewall? He would bring like all of the buckets and things in his house, fill them up with water, and put them directly in the path of the flammable material that could catch the rest of the house on fire. And that way the fire won't be able to go by. So over there, Rabbi Yossi said, if the kalim that you're using there would break because of the flames and would therefore put out the fire, then you're not allowed to do it. You can only use things that don't break because of the flame. So they'll cool it and it won't be able to cross over. So then what this is, seems to be saying is that you cannot put the water into the kli because it's going to actually come directly into contact with the flame. So that would be called the gram kivui. Please write this down. Gorem. So gorem could be anything. One of our easiest gromot means to cause something by doing something which will make it happen, but which you don't do directly. Gruma. So gruma here would be gram kivui. And Rabbi Yossi was saying gram kivui is usher, because the Rabbanan said, what's the difference? Even if the kli, what he was talking about over there about brand new clay cheres, which burst if they're exposed to heat. Obviously, glass could break also. So over there, what are you doing? I mean, the fire is the thing that breaks the glass that puts the fire out. You just went ahead and you bought the Chad Gadya. But I mean, then it was the Malach HaMavis that killed the Sheikhet. I mean, why is that? That's just a grama, right? So over here, Rabbi Yossi is the only one who holds the gram kivui is also. And that's what you seem to be doing over here. The fire jumps into your plate. Not your plate goes ahead and does something to the fire. Says the Mar, come on. That's not going to help you. Let's say it's your Rabbi Yossi. Now you understand the Mishnah? Still doesn't make any sense. Because, I mean, what was Rabbi Yossi talking about? Rabbi Yossi was talking about if there's a fire on Shabbat. Here we're talking about putting a kli there before Shabbat. Now, what does that have to do with it? Did Rabbi Yossi ever say you can't put a kli Erev Shabbat? How would that be usher? Makes no sense at all. Be'erev Shabbat mi amar? Unless you want to try to claim that our Mishnah is only talking about the issur of doing this on Shabbos, but that's not true. Because it says, Beferish in the Bright, that you can put a kli to be makabel nitzotzot even on Shabbos, and for sure on Erev Shabbos, but you cannot put water in a kli to break a fire because he's being mechabe, and this is on Erev Shabbos, koshken on Shabbos itself. Whoa. So Rabbi Yossi is not a solution because Rabbi Yossi never asked for doing something Erev Shabbos. Elam or Rav Ashi, therefore Rav Ashi says, look, we've got no choice but to bite the bullet and to say we're introducing a new issue over here, which has nothing to do with the machlokas of Rabbi Yossi and the Rabbanan. Everybody would agree over here in the Rabbanan that this is a different case. And the different case is Mipnei Shemikarev et Kibuyo. What does that mean? Tosfos explains Mikarev es Kibuyo. And he inserts this explanation in Rashi, even though it is not the simple way to see Rashi, is that the idea over here is that since on Shabbos, it is very possible that at the very moment that you're putting the water into this dish, a piece falls on it while you're pouring the water. So you would be actually putting it out. Or how about if you're moving a dish full of water and putting it under the Nair, and just as you're moving it under the Nair, you catch, without even knowing that that was going to happen, you catch the piece of wick that's burning and falling directly. It's a perfect catch directly into your kli. But over there, you're being mechabe. You're not just a gram kivui. So because of that, and since this is so similar to the din about the nitzotzot, which is mutter bein lifnei Shabbat, bein liachar Shabbat, bein b'Shabbat itself. So because of that, we had to make the din of not putting the water in that very same kli to be true both lifnei Shabbat and on Shabbat. Because if we didn't, then if we allowed you to do it lifnei Shabbat, in your mind it would become the equivalent of the nitzotzot problem without water, and you would do it on Shabbos, which might have actually come lidei kibui mamash. So this is the way Tosfos understands it, and it's certainly an easy way to read it. Hadran Alach, Perek Kira.